Welcome to the Floor Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, owner of Illustrious Hardwoods in Mesa, Arizona. We're a month into the year, and I hope you're killing it. You know, some would say that they're watching this live, and, you know, it's Happy New Year for the most part. But, you know, we're a month into the year when this is coming out, and I hope that you are getting your business in order, in line, and ready to succeed for this year. You're doing the work behind the scenes to make it happen. That's why you're here listening to the show. And you need to go let your friends and neighbors and coworkers and let everybody else know. Tell another business owner about this show and how it can help them move their business forward. Our guest this week, Dennis DiCarlo, owner of Cronus Software and Carpet to Go. And we're going to talk about... Look, I'm so not prepared. I'm just killing it over here right now. We're going to talk about effective leadership. I am not effectively leading this podcast right now.
We'll get there.
Yes, we will. So I have a cheat sheet, folks. I usually do not, but I do this time. Essentially, a lot of us, we go from working for somebody and we say, I don't like this. I don't like you. I can do it better. I'm going to go out on my own. And yet the only thing we were ever taught was some hand skills. Maybe they were right. Maybe they were wrong. And then you start trying to go and training people or growing a company, or you go and you know, I know a lot of installers have moved on in the world. They can't install anymore. They buy retail stores. And that's a whole new ballgame. You end up with employees, salespeople. You know, there's multiple different divisions you're dealing with. And none of it's easy because you haven't learned how to communicate. You haven't learned how to delegate. You haven't learned how to set a vision and explain that to people so that they can go and do all these things they need to do. Dennis has been on this journey, not once, but twice, although the software company is very closely tied into the retail stores, but it is a separate thing. And now he's having to build that up and put the same things in place that he learned through growing this retail chain into the software business. And so we're going to talk about how to not be a micromanager, how to delegate out tasks effectively, all of these fun things that you miss when you're only learning hand skills. And if this is something that you need, then you need to listen in every week, because we're always talking about something that has to do with the business side of the business instead of the contracting side of the business. Look, there's plenty of places to go learn hand skills. Go get certified with one of the great organizations, pick CFI, NAFCT, NWFA. Go get your CTI. Do something with the NTCA. Go work with World Floor Covering Associate. And go, there's the alphabet soup of acronyms out there. There's plenty of knowledge on that side of it. Not a lot of people are talking the business side of it. This is where you're going to learn how to do that, and you will always make more money behind the desk than you ever will in the field, because you learn how to keep it when you sit behind the desk. That's enough out of me. Dennis and I are going to get into it in a minute, but first, if you're looking for an easy and affordable way to manage your business, Cronus Flooring Software is your solution. You can streamline your workflow from managing leads, inventory, and scheduling installations. It includes every feature needed to support your business at a very affordable price. It's extremely user-friendly and easy to navigate. It fully integrates with QuickBooks Online so that you can move your invoices over and just have it upload all that data, get payroll done, all those fun things that, you know, transferring data is a complete pain in the butt. Click of a button, send it on over, done. And, you get to check your profitability that way too. Look at that. See everything. It's just making your life easier. So you can visit cronussoft.com to schedule a demo. Let them know I sent you over there. It's cronussoft.com. You'll get to talk to Dennis's daughter, Chesney. She's super awesome. She's going to walk you through it. And Dennis is a retailer. He couldn't find a good flooring solution for a CRM and a scheduler and to be able to put the data in. And it was a mess. And we're going to kind of get into that in this episode of where the software came from, because that's part of this journey of effective leadership. But it's built by a retailer for retailers, for people in flooring, as opposed to a software company knowing how to make software and then saying, let's get into the flooring space. This is a flooring space that went out and hired a developer and brought them in and said, I want it created this way. And that's the advantage that you're going to get with them, besides the years of experience that they have running a flooring business. And you can ask them questions. They're not going to just tell you it's about the software. They're going to help you learn. All right. So that's enough out of me. Dennis, who are you? What do you do? And why do you do it?
It was interesting to listen to your lead up saying what experiences people had typically started with, I don't like you and I want to do my own thing. That was exactly what happened to me. It was funny. It's funny how we all probably share some common things together. I was 24. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was working in property management, actually. And through that company, we bought flooring. That's all I knew about flooring was that we had bought some flooring to install ourselves for apartments. And my boss was being a jerk. And I was saying, I talked to my wife. She was fortunately very supportive. And I said, you know, if we're going to have kids, we're going to have a family. This is the time to do something for myself and take that leap. And, you know, in hindsight, you always look back and realize how little you know. It's probably best to have a little courage than smarts at that point. I think that's probably the way I've done it all along, is just learn from the things that I did wrong. And, and I did everything wrong at the beginning and didn't know anything about flooring at all. And my story was a little bit different. I didn't do installations, but I, you know, very beginning, had no money, literally dead broke, borrowed a warehouse from a person we knew for 6 months that he was trying to sell the property, no forklift. And I was able to sell back to the guy that I was working for doing apartments. And it wasn't a whole lot to start, but I didn't know what a carpet pole was. I tried to take carpet off when I rented a forklift and didn't have any idea how to get it off of the truck. But I, you know, essentially started with nothing. So I learned the same that everybody has to learn that starts a business is, you know, I did the accounting, I did the warehousing, I did the sales, I did the cutting, and I made a lot of mistakes through that process. But it was hands on. I had to go out to every single job. I checked it. I actually, you know, I'd ask the customers I knew because I used to work with them at the previous company, like, you know, is this a good seam? I didn't know. Over time, I learned the flooring part of it. I figured it out. And again, I learned enough to ask questions and know what I didn't know. So I was able to learn. But, you know, we transitioned into doing apartment replacement work exclusively. And, you know, I grew enough that I started realizing that this was going to be difficult to continue doing myself all the time, doing every part of it.
I think that's the dream though, right? Is we want to start the business. We want to grow it. And then you get too busy for you. And that's really where this conversation takes off, is that you make that first hire. And I don't know anyone that's made their first hire successfully. And maybe that person's still around, but guaranteed there was a rough patch of you learning to go from like owner operator only into that boss role and learning how to be a leader instead of just this person that barks orders. And I think that's where a lot of us are at, is we bark orders and we tell people what we want done, right? It's like, hey, go do this. Well, that person's never done that before. So how are they supposed to know, right? And then you get mad because they don't do it.
Yeah, interestingly, the very first hire I had that you're bringing up, you know, I realized I wasn't gonna be able to take a vacation. I was gonna work my whole life doing this. I wouldn't be able to take a break. And I was like, the only way I can do this is to bring somebody on that could at least. That was my goal, really, at the beginning, was that at least that I could, you know, have a break occasionally and not have to do everything. And, you know, I brought somebody on as a manager, but the one thing I realized I had to do before I brought them on was I had to make a little bit more money because I couldn't afford to bring them on. And I think that's a crucial time. That's the step before even bringing somebody on, is where people realize that, you know, how am I going to be able to make a little more money to afford somebody? Or you're just married to this business and it runs you your whole life because you never have time to actually improve it. And, you know, I opened up on Saturdays. I opened up the Carpet to Go. We actually changed the name because I opened selling remnants. I did it all myself. I took a truckload of carpet off of trucks, re-rolled them, put them up. and realized and worked on Saturday, sometimes Sundays, and realized I had to make a little bit more money in order to put back into the business so that I could hire somebody, for my gratification. But when I hired that first employee, it's funny looking back. You say, nobody did it successfully. It's almost embarrassing when you look back. But I learned it. I did it because I knew I had a need. But we were constantly, when it was just two of us, we were working at cross purposes because I knew pretty well about how I kind of wanted to run things. I always felt like you needed systems in place to make things more efficient. And he was a seat of the pants guy. And that's what we all run into, right? Everybody has their different talents, different things. And he always said he was like a duck where his feet were moving underwater and he was calling the service. But he would constantly repeat the same activities over and over again. I was like, let's make this where it's efficient, where we're not having to waste a bunch of time and be, dealing with crises all the time. Let's figure out a way to do it. And he would do one thing. I didn't even know how to really communicate to him what I wanted. So he would do one thing, and then I would go back and try to correct it. I would just fix it, what he was doing wrong. We weren't really working together at all. We got along well. We had a good time. We got along, but we weren't. It wasn't productive because, he was doing a part of what I was doing, but it was almost, one and a half times, not, you hope to get three times because he would, we'd have a bunch of crews going out and we had to write down their cuts all, for apartment, anybody that's done apartment replacement work, you have cuts that they call in the orders. And every day he would go look at it and then go talk to the installers. Now, what was this the last time you did? What issues do you have? And he'd have maybe talk to another installer and come back. And I was always take the time. I know it's busy. Let's write this down instead of you just reinventing it every morning. And, in the end, it was just inefficient, but I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know how to say to him, let's do this or communicate in a way there's a better way because he was doing his thing. I was doing my thing. And, it worked, but it just didn't work so that we could continue to grow because,
I think we get caught up in the fires, and that's, he's putting out his fires, you're putting out your fires, and so you have everything's managed technically, but it's not being managed well because you're constantly fixing this thing, and then as you fix that, this thing got messed up and you're fixing that. And I think what we really need to learn is that if you can step back and find the root cause, which it seems to be that there was a communication issue and there wasn't a solid process to go from point A to point B on anything in the business at that time. If you would have been able to take the time and realize what the actual problem was, you would have fixed all of the problems you were seeing at once. And I don't know that everyone always realizes that. They try and put out the fire, and then while they're doing that, like I said, it goes to another one and another one and another one. But the root cause is something three steps back. And if you fix that root cause, all of them go out at once, and that's going to be a better time investment. And that's where, when I talk about, like, you got to work on the business, folks, like, you need to step back and you need to get that 10,000 foot view. Because I bet Dennis didn't realize what was going on until he finally took a step back and said, oh, like, let me actually look at the entire picture. But you tell
In all
me.
honesty, it took a lot of years to look back at it because I think, what was, looking back again, I've thought about this. The thing is, you get us. I got knowledge. I got knowledge about doing flooring. And when I was doing everything myself, I used my own strength and weaknesses to run the business. But the thing I didn't have was a complete skill set to run a business. It wasn't just going back and looking at the issue. I didn't have the skill set to communicate. That was really, I didn't know how to tell somebody else, this is what we should be doing, and saying, here's a better way, and sit down. And then, come simple things like creating a budget, talk to them about the budget, seeing that we're going to achieve a budget later on. You're just winging it. You're doing everything. Nobody's I feel like you can read books, but nobody, when you're caught up in the middle of it, is telling you how to do all these things. So a lot of it becomes trial and error. And at that time, I don't even know if I think what you're saying is at some point I did. Once I was able to evaluate what I couldn't do and what I wasn't doing well, then I could go back and look at it and say, okay, let's make changes. At that point, I just didn't have the ability to, I didn't have the skill set. And the question is, how do you get the skill set? And And it took me a while to even realize that I didn't have the skill set, because I ended up going into retail fully from that. We had a warehouse at that point. We were doing mostly apartment replacement work, but we ended up going to a retail location. And same old story. I had no money, just the same situation everybody has, that painted the showroom in a not great area all by myself. I was winging it. We ended up having to hire more people, and I'm having to hire people to do some accounting work. Some hired the manager was doing sales with me, same person at that point, doing a lot of the warehousing ourselves as we grew. But that's when it started to really sink in that I not only didn't have the skill sets, I just didn't have all the tools to be able to take that step of growth. And it becomes overwhelming. And I remember clearly at one point, after we had been there for about 9 months to a year, that I came in one day. It's funny how impactful this is. More than 25 years ago, 20 something years ago, but how impactful it is. And I just like lost my cool. I was so tired of having to pick up the trash every day I walked in the store and go and look at the toilet wasn't cleaned, and the warehouse wasn't neat and all that. And I just called everybody in, and I blew my lid, yelling, "Everybody, you need to take accountability," all that. And I can say that one good thing is I was far enough along and maybe humble enough to realize when I got done, maybe that night when I was going to sleep, saying, "That was really stupid. That was you. That was completely ineffective." And that's when I sought out to say, what am I doing wrong? Like, what is it that I'm doing wrong? What do I not? And I think it does require some humility at that point to realize that I'm not just going to keep on beating my head against the wall and do the same thing. Like, I got to be humble to realize that I'm not managing this well, because the number one thing that I realized going to bed that night was I hadn't told them all to do anything. I hadn't told them to do those things. I just expected people would be like me and they would do the same thing, because I was used to working hard and doing it. That they, I never actually told somebody, "Hey, you clean the bathroom on Monday and I'll clean it." It doesn't mean you're not going to participate in the work. It's just, I need some help, clean up the trash when you walk in. I had never told anybody, and I just expected that they would do it. But I realized I needed tools to get to the next level.
I think that's exactly it. Is even when, as installers, we'll hire our apprentice, it's, "Hey, go do this." Well, I don't know. They don't know how. And yet we're sending them in. We're like, "Hey, go sweep the room," because everyone knows how to use a broom, except the way that we need to sweep a room, because we want it really, really clean and we don't want anything left. I would send them in there, and I would send my guy, my first employee that I hired in there. And I was like, "Hey, just go sweep the room for me. I'm going to come in. I'm going to check it. I'm going to show you how I want the room swept after you sweep it, but I want you to sweep it first. Like, get it really, really clean for me." So he comes out, he's like, it's like 2, 3 minutes later, right? He did it real quick. And I'm like, "All right, I'm going to sweep the room." And I pushed his pile off to the side and I went in and I start sweeping, and I'm like digging underneath the drywall because the baseboards are off, and getting everything out. And it takes me like 6, 7 minutes to do the whole room. And my pile's like four times as big as his. He's like, "Oh," I was like, "Yeah, all right. So now the bedroom next door, I need you to go sweep and then come and get me when you're done." So he spends a little bit longer. And then I go in there and I sweep that room, and my pile's only like half the size. I was like, "Cool, now go do the other bedroom," right?
Right.
But it's like one of those things where sometimes it's easier to like show somebody, but I don't think that we always tell them, like the trash thing. You want your parking lot picked up. You want the stuff in front of the building looking nice. And as an owner, you take pride in it. And you assume that, well, everyone working here takes pride in the business that they're a part of. Like, they're just going to clean it up. You never ask, but you said it, right? You never ask them to do it. You never explain that, hey, this is part of your job description. This is part of your responsibilities here. So why are they going to do it if they don't know that they have to do it? They're not going to clean the toilet. You didn't tell any of them you had to clean the toilet. They keep going in there and it's randomly clean all the time. No one's noticing that it's you, probably. It's not on the radar. And that's the biggest thing, I think, is that we just don't even clearly communicate what we want done. We just expect things to get done. And that's really the first change that you can even make, is just have a little decency and talk to people like they're five, right? Explain it to them like they're a child, and you don't have to talk down to them, but if they've never done it before.
This actually is something you said that, and you did a better job than I did. It sounds like you actually went in there and showed them how to sweep the room where I was just winging it. I think this is something that happened much later in my career, and actually fairly recently was, I think for me, it was more the fact that I was embarrassed to tell somebody to do something else. Like I always felt like I did it myself and I was embarrassed to communicate to them. And I think what I've reflected on is that a lot of people feel like they're creating conflict when they're direct with their communication. And when in reality, they're creating conflict. By not saying something directly and clearly communicating what they mean and what they want. Most people just want that. Just tell me what it is you want. And by you going in and saying, I want this floor this clean, it's the same kind of thing. They just want to know. If you go in and just say, clean the bathroom, then again, it might not be very clean. And then what we all do is we get pissed off because they're not doing it clean enough. We're like, you know, just the clear communication to say, I've done it. I have no embarrassment about doing it, and I'll do it again. Just here's how I want you to clean the bathroom. I want you to do this. And I think a lot of us are embarrassed because we're afraid that the person's going to get mad. You know, it could be anything that you're communicating. Hey, you need to do your paperwork differently, or I'd like you to do this. I'll listen to what you have to say about it, but this is why I want things a certain way. And say it to people because we're afraid they're going to get mad. We're afraid they're going to get reject what we're saying or get angry. That's really what I learned over the years is direct communication is really important. Direct saying people exactly. And again, it's not being a jerk or yelling at people or whatever, just being direct and professional by saying, here's what I want. And again, be willing to listen. If you're just demanding things all the time, then people aren't receptive to being a part of something. But if you're saying clearly, this is what I want, that makes sense. Do you have any comment? Do you have anything that you want to, is there a reason you would want to do it differently? Please come to me, but this is what I want. And I want it done exactly like this. You sound like you learned it a lot earlier.
I think you got to set that standard. I was very lucky that I've had a lot of these conversations, right? You got to set that standard. If you don't cast a vision, and I know that this is kind of one of the things that we're going to hit on, and so we can get into that. If you don't cast the vision, if you don't set where you want something to go, if people don't know what the standard is, they're never going to hit it. Only you know what it is because you're the owner, but if you don't communicate that out to anybody, then how do they hit it, right? If you don't have a way of checking, right? Everyone's always, the employees are never going to build the shower as good as me. They never install the floor as good as me. Because they don't know how? You showed them methods, but you didn't give them like the checklist to do it. You just said, do this, right? But you didn't give them a way to ensure that it's done. There isn't a going back and checking off. There's no way to ensure the standard is hit. And so it's not clear how to get there. So you had on the notes there that at one point you came in and you started setting a vision for the company and really detailing out where you wanted to go. And you started working with the budgets and things like that. I've been really big on that's something that's missing in a lot of these small businesses within the construction and small businesses in general, but definitely within construction is great. We learned a hand skill. We go and we sell it, except nobody has core values, a mission statement, a vision statement. They don't know what their company stands for. And then they try and make hires and they're hiring anybody. And then they look at it and they're like, oh, you're not trustworthy. And you're not humble and, you know, you don't have a good work ethic, but all of these things seem to be important to you. So they should be important to the company, which means make them core values. And then you can hire based off of those. And you would have been able to identify that before anybody came in. And so you're years down the road and you walked in and you were like, all right, this is all got to stop. But what did it do once you did it?
The best decision I ever had was I decided to read The 7 Habits Highly People by Stephen Covey. You know, I know not everybody's readers. I was a reader, so I kind of said, hey, I'm going to – and it all stemmed from you got to have motivation. I was motivated because I was frustrated. You know, you want to – I'm sure everybody's in the same situation. I see posts. I see things that people are frustrated. Don't do that because people are horrible and all that. And that comes from that situation where – you think everybody's acting on you, and you're not willing to be humble enough to know, hey, I got to make a change. I got to do something differently myself. And fortunately, I found something that I think was extremely effective. And I read that book. I ended up, I just felt like I'd read other self-help stuff, but it was mainly just kind of telling you should do this. And it was like, no, whatever. I already know I need to do it. I'm trying to give somebody to tell me how to go about it, because it's hard to make change. You can say you want to lose weight, but to say how to go about doing it in a kind of a scheduled way, that's what I felt like. I think it's helped tons of people. I ended up reading The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, and my wife and I both looked at it, and it gives you that's the thing about it, is it gives you tools to I think that's where mission statements came from. It may have been before that, but I know he preaches that in the book, but he kind of tells you these are the leadership principles that are true to everybody in the whole world. It's not just, I'm going to tell you one way to do it. These principles work, and they've been proven to work. And then you look at it this way and see how you fit into that, to this character, this whole thing, and how you're going to correct how you act versus we know the right ways to act. I think one of the main things that the people at my office are frustrated, and they laugh, of course, because I talk about the number one thing I learned there was, there were some leadership skills things about how to communicate things, but the four quadrants, and I think this is really relevant to everybody that's in business. It's the first thing that we know is difficult, but we don't really understand it until you get some outside influence. Like, you can't really even process this stuff without somebody. This guy spent his lifetime thinking about how to become more effective, and the ways that it's been done over human lifetimes, and how to go about it. We're just trying to make a buck doing floors, so we don't have the ability to really process this stuff. And the four quadrants are important and urgent is the number one quadrant, and number two is important and not urgent, and then unimportant urgent is the third, and fourth is unimportant non-urgent. And a lot of people waste time. Like the fourth quadrant's one where if you would think nobody would do things that are unimportant and non-urgent, but we waste time with little social media, Facebook, the things we're doing with our time wasters. Those are in four, and mainly people work in one. Everybody that's a hard worker, that most of your listeners are probably the same way. They're dealing with things as they come at them, because they got to re-deal with them each time they deal with, something comes up, because they're not planning ahead, they're not setting the plan. And really, the goal is to get into quadrant two, which is non-urgent but important. And I really, like, amongst other things, that was just a principle that I said, this is time for me to get a handle on this business. I was always kind of systems oriented. I knew we had to follow systems, especially as we grew. But I realized that was, I don't know if that was even a step towards effective leadership. It was more a tool of effective leadership that I realized that I needed to get. Get more organized, and get where I could do things ahead of time and anticipate things and learn things and communicate these things before they happen, rather than just dealing with them as they're urgent. We looked into software. We ended up getting some software at that point. I think Outlook is something we got at that point. Outlook has some great tools with Task Manager. If you're not using the Task Manager, that's probably been the best tool. Because it's linked to your phone, or anytime. Yeah, I don't know if everybody's like me. They're busy. They're doing something else, and somebody tells you something, and then 4 days later, I forgot our meeting, Kyle. So you can appreciate that. Like, I get that right then, or I forget. I forget. And so on your phone, you can just click that, and it stays with your emails and Outlook.
Yeah,
And then, we ended
I
up
get
getting
it.
software that helped us at that point. It wasn't a great software, unfortunately, but it did help us, at least like with apartment replacement work. They had templates in place where, again, that whole deal where we're, scurrying around trying to get the cuts and write them down every time, the program has the templates recorded, and it just prints out the whole work order for you in a second as soon as the person calls in. So yeah, that I'd say that was the most important thing that I in that first step. I mean, I'm still learning a lot of things to this day, but that was the first step towards saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to do these things better and learn from some other people.
Well,
Sorry, talk to
I like that you're coming at it and you keep saying, I'm still learning, I'm still learning, I'm still learning, right? So one, you have this humble attitude of like, I don't know everything, and even though I'm the boss, and it's my company, like I have to step back and realize I have shortcomings and I need to find a way to fix them. And that's where a lot of us need to be doing. And honestly, if you're here listening, you're probably already doing that. If you're new, maybe you're just getting into that, but we don't know everything. I don't care. If you're the guy that's out there saying I've been doing it 20 years and I don't need to know anything else, the technology has changed in 20 years. Yes, you do need to know something else because it's not the same as it was 20 years ago, and it's not going to be the same in another 20 years. And so being able to come in and have that attitude is the first huge step in being able to get any of this. And then I like that you're assisting yourself with technology. I couldn't run my life without my phone at this point. It's constantly dinging at me and telling me where to go and when to go and who to call at what time. And it makes my life, one, it's easier because I once I program it, I can forget about it. And I think that was a lesson I learned very early on, was I had a schedule in my head of 5, 6, 7 different projects and when they were going to be going. And then the minute I bought a board, like a whiteboard, and I put it on my kitchen wall and made my wife mad because now there's this business board in the middle of her kitchen. But
you
there
got
was
a good wife.
I sure do. None of this would exist without her. She is very patient with me. But I was able to get everything out of my head. And so now there was this like written down schedule of when the projects would happen, when deliveries needed to be made, when pickups needed to happen. And I could stop forgetting. I didn't have to think about it anymore and try and remember everything. It was just out of my head, which freed up bandwidth to allow me to go focus on something else. And I think that was a really big step, was just learning to write the unimportant things down. The other thing that you said that was really interesting was when you're talking about the four quadrants, we've got that like not important, not urgent thing. And one of the things that I know that I do, and everybody does it, is we'll make a list of tasks we need to do, right? And it's, okay, I got to do this delivery and I got to do this install and I got to go have this consultation done. I got to write up that quote. And, oh, I have to go pick up my dry cleaning and I have to take out the laundry and I have to check the mail. Okay. Well, those last three things are really easy to do. And the other ones all suck. And so you go and you check the mail and you like switch your laundry and you pick up the dry cleaning and you run to the corner store and you buy the milk and you go check, 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 check. And half your list is gone and you're like, yep, it was a good, productive day. You did nothing.
That's in Stephen Covey, Big Rocks First. And I don't know if I said this, but you can actually get it on Spotify. You can listen to it. So if you're working during the day, you can actually listen to the whole thing. And it's actually, you know, just like this podcast, it helps the day go quicker when you're actually learning something. I recommend that to anybody because that's what I'm saying about Stephen Covey, is he doesn't just say do the four quadrants. That's one of the first lessons of going from quadrant one to two it's like filling up a bowl. How do you do it? You fill up the big rocks first, and then it fills up the bowl more quickly. Something along those lines. But that's get the big stuff done first.
Yes,
that might not want the important big stuff.
And it's the way that I've learned to do it. The way that it was explained to me from another podcast that I listened to is you have three things that you'll put down that are like the big three important tasks you need to accomplish that day, right? Those can go in like the top left corner, 1, 2, 3. You should always get one done. You may start working on two or get it done. You'll most likely never get to three, and it just kind of gets moved up the list as you need to do it. Those daily tasks, those errands that you need to run, they have a separate section down on like the bottom right or bottom left of his worksheet, and they go there and you can do them on your way home. But the only thing you need to focus on are those key things that you need to do when you show up or you start your day, whatever it is, right? If you're doing office work, if you're going to the install, like whatever it is that needs to get accomplished, if you need to get that one room installed, that's the thing that's going to happen. Don't get distracted. Don't go doing the, you know, oh, I can go prep this thing because it's easier. Get the thing that matters. Let's see. I'm going to interrupt this real quick and then we'll jump back in and we'll start going further into this. And I love that it's available on Spotify. Learn while you earn. That's one of the mottos around here. You know, that's what I was doing when I was on the floor constantly, is it was podcasts and books, because I don't have anything better to do for 8 hours a day while I'm installing. I might as well fill my ear holes with something other than music that I've been listening to for 20 plus years. And while I enjoy it, it's not getting any better. It's just not getting worse. All right. We got a quick word from Johns Manville. Compatible with all GoBoard products is the new GoBoard membrane. If you're asking why a membrane when GoBoard itself is waterproof through and through, the answer is simple. A membrane extends your GoBoard installation for mud pans, steam rooms, and shared walls requiring a fire-rated board under the waterproofing. Now, who's going to be the most badass GoBoard installer out there? You are. Visit www.jm.com/GoBoard for all the product details. Don't forget about their pan, their wedges. They've got, you know, if you go and ask nicely, GoBoard doesn't come in just half inch thick. They got like 2 inch GoBoard. You just got to get your supplier to bring it in, and then you can build out those benches and walls and all the good stuff. And you know you want that good, good GoBoard. All right, Dennis, we brought technology in. And that was, besides having a plan and then, you know, giving people budgets, and you really started figuring out this, like, I have to cast this vision and get people to follow along with it, and they need to know what their job is and know what to do. But then it was getting effective and holding people accountable with software. And so how did that change the business, and what did that process look like to even bring that in?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know the average age of the listener. I say to my kids all the time, like, you got to remember, we were just up in the mountains, and they're like, did you have a, you know, did you know where you were going? I was like, remember, this was before phones, GPS, anything, that when I first bought this place. So, you know, with the technology, really, it's amazing how far it's come, you know, since, you know, we got the first beepers and everything else back a long time ago. But, you know, technology's come along to the point where, you know, it's, you know, the effectiveness of it is so powerful that, you know, to continue to say, I'm just going to do it the way I did it before and handwrite, just, you know, in my story, I was telling you, we're handwriting those cuts and having to handwrite the cuts again onto a work order. And then when they came back, then you're handwriting again all these calculations onto a pay sheet and wasting, what, six hours a week just paying people and then inevitably arguing with them. You know, that the process of going to software was that, you know, it minimized the amount of time, so it allows you to more time to understand what it is your weaknesses are, because if you're constantly just panic, you know, trying to get things done, then you're not able to spend a moment, a rest, to say, let me look at this going on, this operation going on, and what is it that I could do better. So it started, you know, we started with the software years ago. It was a software that was, you know, it accomplished some things for us. It got us where we were able to look at templates, look at the department replacement templates that we were doing, and, you know, kind of bring our bookkeeping into current times. So that was really part of it. Is like, you know, I'm able to look then right away and say, hey, how's the last 2 weeks been? You know, not look back at the year or look back at the quarter or whatever. I'm actually like, well, how was I doing the last 2 weeks? And actually, with the software we had, even though it was very limited and it had just so many features that didn't do me any good. That was the big part of it. It was a software company that had never had any flooring experience. And somebody would ask them to put a report on, and they just add a report. And it was like, whoever used that? It must have been somebody off in, you know, in another country or something, using whoever wanted that report. That doesn't be absolutely no good. And all these features that you had to memorize. And the technology was older. Everything was coming out of DOS at the time, if people remember that. And it was, you know, you had to memorize every little place that you went on the screen to try to figure it out. But you know, the thing we realized is being able to look at the accounting was that apartment replacement business was not profitable. It was, you know, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we're headquartered. And, you know, I think this was maybe it was 2008. I don't remember. Everybody was moving to Charlotte because it was the up and coming place. And when they moved in, everybody lowered their price to do apartment replacement. A lot of people out of Florida, Texas, they were lowering their prices. And I got to the point where I was realizing, we're not making money. And It was only because I had real-time books at that point telling me what was going on that I was able to realize it quickly enough to be able to say, hey, this is not a path I'm going to be able to sustain going forward. We had the retail store, but we were still doing the apartment replacement work. And I realized that my time was just not well spent. I have to figure out another way to kind of scale the business without that apartment replacement work that was getting there, because what I found really more than anything else is I was dealing with competitive bids. The other people didn't know what they were making, so they were bidding it so low that then I wasn't making anything. And I realized, you know, the hell with this. I'll go fishing rather than keep on losing money, literally mm-hmm. losing money, mm-hmm. trying to continue to manage this business. So I was able to get control. I was able to understand more of the business and see it immediately, what my margins were on every job in real time, and then look back at the month and say, what just happened last week? You know, projections for cash flow. This was early on, and I'm sure like everybody, you're still you don't have capability to get a loan or whatever. You're just, you know, you're on your fingernails waiting for cash to come in all the time. So you were able to project a little bit of your cash and you're able to save some time. And at the, mm-hmm. and you also see where you are. I listened to one of your episodes and I remembered it. I'm sure everybody kind of, when you said that, you know, if you don't know what you're making, then, you know, a lot of the people that we brought in on as customers on Cronus, they don't know until the next year how much money they're making. And I don't know if I was that far behind, but I was, it's, you know, when everything's great, it's great. But when you start going through a downturn and things aren't looking good and you don't even know what you're doing, it just doesn't feel like we're busy. But mm-hmm. I don't really know what actual numbers are. So it got us a step in the right direction. And yeah, I remember listening to you on your episode. I can remember that moment when I realized I had no idea what was going on.
I think that's just part of the effective leadership, though, is if you don't know, if you don't have a pulse on your company, right? If you don't know the numbers, if you don't know that you're going to be able to make payroll, if you don't know that bidding the job in this way is going to make you able to have profit or no profit, then how do you do anything else within the company, right? And so besides the software providing you with a way to manage the crews and scheduling, and you can put in your financial information, you get the CRM out of it, right? It's giving you all of these tools to be able to go back and communicate with people and hold everyone accountable, right? So if you're putting in that Mrs. Smith lives over here and she's got a you know, dog named Fido and it's a German Shepherd, and then she's got Billy and Bobby and little Susie, and the husband's name is John, right? Like, I have all of these details now that I can go back. She calls up, I punch it up. My salesperson can have a conversation with her and be like, well, how's this floor doing? Not just your floor, the specific floor. She can ask about the kids. She can ask about the dogs. Are they creating any problems with it? You're giving your team the tools to effectively communicate with the client so that they have a better experience and you can better solve their problems, which internally solves your problems, because now they're not coming to you and like, I don't know what you want from me. I can't do anything because I don't have anything. That file got lost in the great flood of 2012.
The dust through the old trailer in the back or whatever you're going through mm-hmm. boxes for. Yeah, right. That's the truth of it. Well, you know, it got to a point where years later, that's when we got to the decision-making about creating Cronus was actually, this is the main difficult people have, I think, with thinking about switching to software. Everybody says, I've been doing it the same way. The question is, are they doing it well the same way, or are they just doing it the way they feel comfortable? And I think there's a few factors that people look to stay doing it the way they've always done it. Is a little bit of fear. Like, I don't want to, I'm good at installing, I'm good at selling, I'm good at doing the warehouse or accounting. And if I get into this technology that I'm not as comfortable with, then it shows some kind of a weakness. So you do have to, you know, admit that there's something you have to learn in order to take that step to move forward. And then, you know, the cost. So the cost of software can be extremely expensive. And there's a time frame where you got to take a step back, and that's moving from quadrant one to quadrant two, is you have to take a step back, and you might have to work more hours or do everything to work less hours in the future or get control of it. And the software we were using actually came out. We had spent, I want to say, $12,000, $13,000, like 15 years ago to get the software. And I was like, what? Even at the time, I was like, what? That's just absurd. It felt like robbery. And it was a lot of training, and it was bad technology. Everything was server-based, so you had a ton of hardware. You had software that ran the hardware, the SQL Server, that you had to do every 3 or 4 years, and it was $3,500. And the company we were working for actually said, we're not supporting it anymore, and you have to rebuy everything. And we were like, we didn't like the program to start with, let alone rebuy everything. So, I had somebody come in that was handling our technology. There was a previous programmer that had a lot of experience in creating programming, and he was doing our IT work too. And he looked at our computers that were all latched together in all these ways, and he was like, this is just crazy in today's world to do things the way that they're doing it from a hardware standpoint. That was his his mindset. From the usability standpoint, I was just like, this, it's not user-friendly. It's not where we can do sales really quickly. And at this point, we had grown to four stores. We've now grown to five, but at four stores, we were having to, get everybody to link into our servers. And it was a difficult process, but, he was looking at it, the hardware side, and I was looking at you standpoint. I know what it takes to make money doing flooring, or at least, I will say, I've learned enough that I did wrong, that I've learned a few things along the way. And I think most people do it that way, that I've learned how not to do things. And I've learned things like you have to be able to quote quickly. You have to be able to train new people easily. Like, it has to be simple. It has to be very user friendly. You have to have a good CRM system. You said that earlier about CRMs. None of the software that we were looking at had CRMs that were what we considered useful. Like, when we're looking at our own lives and looking at salespeople and everything else, the number one thing is you get busy and you don't follow up. And then that's like the number one rule of profitability is following up. Like, you have this, you spend money, you spend your time, you spend your life basically learning these skills. And then somebody calls you and, either from advertising dollars or from, all this that you've put into your business, and then you forget to call them back. I mean, that's the reality of everybody. And I was saying to Victor, who's our technology person, I was saying, there's a better way to do this. And we came up with something where it's not just a CRM, and nobody was doing it. Everybody that had CRMs, I think everybody knows what a CRM is. Just basically a reminder system. All of them were based on spreadsheets, where you kind of had to manipulate the spreadsheet to be able to even keep up with it. And it was like, I don't even want to spend the time to do that. So we actually created a system in which it automatically reminds you by email or in the system when you put in a customer. It automatically reminds you every step of the process that you got to follow up with them. And then, everybody in the store can see that you followed up, and you can remind yourself. It's really a tool that the busier you get, it simplifies the process, because we're in the business. We deal with these issues. We're dealing with the ones that go to profitability, not just some fancy spreadsheet that you can print out.
Well, I love that you're saying that it's reminding you every step of the way, but everybody in the company can see where it's at. I know from my experience, and I know that there's plenty of others like me, especially as the owner operator that's looking to only do higher priced, higher margined projects. If you don't get back to me, I'm going to follow up with you after 24 hours. I'm going to follow up with you after 7 days, and I might follow up with you after 2 weeks. Maybe I leave the email in there until 30 days and follow up with you again. Maybe. Generally, if I didn't hear with you from within 2 weeks, that email that was, sent, I carbon copy myself on everything so that I get a copy of it. It stays in my inbox. That way I don't have to have the all mail up or anything like that. And that's my reminder, right? If I like a really clean inbox, and that system works for me. And so after 2 weeks, you're annoying me. You didn't get back to me. You're ghosting me. Get out of here. I'm not doing it. And then I would never follow up again. But I'd already gone and done five more leads. So there was five new emails. Like, I don't care. One of them's going to go. And it, but what I realized now, looking back, I could have scaled the company sooner. I could have grown it, and I could have had another crew if I would have been better about following up, about reaching out. Because I did have people that would come back, and it was 6 months, 12 months, 24 months later saying, hey, we're ready now. Can we get on the schedule? Well, no, I have to change your bid, and we got to talk about this, and like, let me come out and look at it again. I don't remember everything. But yes, we can make that happen, because we owner operators generally want somebody that's like really early on in the buying cycle, or I'm sorry, at the end of the buying cycle. And sometimes we get people that are at the beginning of it, and the buying mm-hmm. cycle is long. It's 9 to 18 months. And so
expensive.
You need to have a way to do this. And this system gives you the way to manage. But then the problem within companies is that, you know, Susie is salesperson A, and she has five clients, and she knows everything that's going on with them. Well, guess what? She scheduled vacation. And so Bob has no idea what Susie has going on. And she's like, well, just handle my clients while I'm gone. Like, you have to. Now he has nothing. So with the system in place, he can go in, see where everything's at, all the steps, exactly where he needs to follow up. All the details are there, and everything is effectively communicated over to him, which allows you as the leader to hold him accountable to like, hey, how are Susie's projects going? And he says, oh, it's great. Right. Everything's right here. It's giving you the resources to be able to expand your team and communicate. There was something I read, I listened to, and it was it's not about the transfer of knowledge. It's about the speed of it. I forget exactly what it is. It's in my phone. I'll have to find it, and maybe I'll add it in the notes or something like that. But it was the goal is to be able to get other people in the company downloaded on whatever they need to be as quickly and effectively as possible, instead of passing things around. I think that's where the old software system had you at, or even the paper system. You're saying like, we're doing the carpet numbers and we're writing it on the original, you know, a sheet of paper so that we can go make the cuts. Then we're writing it down on the invoice, and then we're writing it down on the pay stub, and then we're writing it down on the final file to stick away. And then you needed it one place on a template to have it, so you could pull it up every time, and then it would get put in the computer, and it would print out in triplicate and quadruplicate, whatever it needed to be. And all of them were there.
Well, I think you're speaking to something that took me 25 years to figure out. And again, when I say figure it out, I'm still in the steps of figuring it out. So it's interesting to have this conversation, but it really comes down to be able to hold people accountable. Accountability is something I kind of had to figure out. I thought, again, it's a process that we go through where we learn ourselves, we grow ourselves, and then we kind of figure out the meaning of things and how we implement them. Accountability always seemed like a harsh term to me, like mean, like what is it that, you know, you're telling people what they should be doing? And what currently we do in our retail stores is we have an annual meeting, and we, in that annual meeting, actually this year, you're talking about mission statements, we redid our mission statement. Everybody redid it. We also set kind of a goal for the following year. One year it was professional communication, and I told you about that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, this year coming up is accountability. And one of the things about accountability is you can't really hold people accountable if you don't clearly communicate, which I wasn't doing at the beginning. I told you what your goals are. But two, being able to look at, like, compare your goals, like compare how you're matching to your goals. And that's kind of the point you're going to right there, is how I got to have a path forward to compare where I get during the process of the year, or whatever path, or, you know, whatever scaling we've set, or whatever goals we've set. Mm-hmm. If you don't have anything to compare it to, then you can't, you know, you can't measure where, if you're going in the right direction. And, you know, we do it with budgets and comparing our budgets. We do the budgets, and budgets stink. No matter who says they're horrible to do it. But then when you look back at your budget for expenses and everything, that it's a level of accountability for everybody. Like, this is what we projected, and we're look at it every quarter, every month, or whatever time frame, and why did we not hit these numbers, or why did we do great, and why did we succeed? And when you're looking at the CRM, it's the same thing. It's accountability, because you're able to see, you know, the software allows you to, it goes to red if you don't, you know, if you're not following mm-hmm. up, and you're not following the system. And that's, and again, it's accountability. It's not you're catching somebody, or you're saying that, you know, you're not a good person, but if you don't know what you need to be doing, you're not making a plan towards moving towards something and then being able to measure whether it's successful, it's nearly impossible to hold yourself or other people accountable. And that's the process of putting it all in the technologies. It's there. It's available to everybody. It's in a system that you can look at it yourself. You know, you can look at, you're creating real time income statements, so you can look in QuickBooks. It, by the way, it does integrate with QuickBooks. I know I've heard you say that you need a QuickBooks account. It automatically integrates, so you're able to look at your budget and your actuals in QuickBooks in real time and hold yourself and everybody else accountable by measurement. And I think that's what you were speaking to. I just kind
of... There's that part of it, but it just even having the basic info, right? Not even measuring it, just being able to get that info to somebody so that they can work with it. They don't have to go do the research. They don't have to go dig through five different places to get it. It's centralized. It's speedy. Right. It's easy to do. Looking back, can you recall of anybody that you had to... that you either fired or maybe they quit because the accountability wasn't in place and they didn't know what was expected of them? And now you realize that it's me. It wasn't them. It was me.
God, what a good question. You know, cause you're good at raising these memories out of people. And when I listen to your podcast and all, cause you know, that's something that I haven't thought about, but you know, I remember we hired a warehouse person. And again, these must've been things that impacted me cause I remember them. And I don't even know if it was impacting on a learning basis, just kind of an emotional basis. We had, it was early on, and we hired a guy who was a really good guy. He had kind of a rough childhood and all, but a great guy, and he was running the warehouse. And I remember, I think, again, for me, everybody has different things. I was afraid to tell people to do things a certain way because I wanted to treat people like they were adults and do it their own way. And then I realized people want to know. They want to know some kind of, like, what are you expecting out of me? Because if it's just totally random, then you know that you're judging them by your own standard and not by their standard. And I told him at one point, you know, just take your lunch whenever it works with the warehouse flow, and just you know, just make sure you're keeping up with it. Let me know. And totally random, not like, you know, I think a better method now is this is when we take lunch. Mm-hmm. Make your decision. This is when we do it. And then if there's a truck out there, or if you, even if you, you know, had plans to meet a half an hour early, just make sure everybody knows, but here's when we take lunch. And that's what I didn't do. I just said, take lunch whenever I didn't. And it ended up, I'd come back and it'd be, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. Nobody had seen George. And I'd say, where's George? And they're like, I don't know. He's at lunch. And then I'd wait and I'm like, where is he? And what I realized is, I gave him too much leeway. He was, and I think, I always looked at that. You know, one book I learned that I read recently, and I can't say his name right, Jocko Willing.
Yes.
Extreme Ownership, something like that. You know, I've always felt like I've done that pretty well, but it requires almost some pain in saying to yourself, like, hey, you are the problem. It's not him. He wasn't the problem. And we've remained friends. I've remained friends with people I've fired before. Basically was like, this just isn't working. And he knew it. And he ended up getting another job with a distributorship. And we remained friends afterwards. But I created that environment because I didn't communicate to him that here's the structure. You make intelligent decisions within this structure. I just threw him to the wolves and said, you know, do whatever. But that extreme ownership, it's easier said than done, because it's helpful to say to yourself, you know, why I have to take accountability for this situation. It wasn't George's fault. It was my fault. It was 100% totally my fault, because I could have done anything. I could have hired better. I could have communicated better. I could have. And that doesn't mean you're never going to have to let somebody go when you're, you know, not at cross purposes. You're not at a common goal. But you can do something to impact that experience better than you have been doing. And That if you lose the humility, you lose. I read on Facebook recently, it stuck with me. It was about 6 months ago, and it stuck with me ever since, that an older flooring store owner had said, in bringing his son along, that the only things that are the important things that I've learned were things that I learned when I thought I knew everything. And I when you asked that question, that was one that kind of almost hurts looking back, because he was a really good guy, and I hated that I was the cause of that.
Well, I appreciate you. Ooh, that's coming back real harsh. I appreciate you sharing, though, because it's what I know is that I struggle to keep employees because I didn't set good enough standards for them to follow. They didn't know what those standards are. And I know that other owner operators struggle with it because you can constantly see it in the Facebook groups online where they're, you know, oh, I had to let the guy go. He didn't do this or he doesn't do that. Why don't stop blaming them, right? This is a great example of where Jocko and Extreme Ownership comes in, and actually take a step back, look at it, and figure out what the common denominator in the situation is. You know, what keeps happening every time you hire someone, you're hiring them, and then it ends up with you firing them because they don't perform the way you expected them to. What's common in that? All right. It can't be that those people all have the same flaw. I bet you it's you, whether you want to believe it or not. I bet you it's you. And I've had to admit that it's me in many a situation. This is what I've been spending like the last, almost 2 years of my life trying to figure out is, you know, it's me that's screwing all this stuff up. How do I fix it? And I think that's the key. There's a reason that, again, one of my greatest assets is that I didn't grow up in this business. I stumbled into it. I chose to be here, but I was fortunate to work at some larger companies, not very long, but long enough to see some things. And so when I worked at Grainger, when I worked at UPS, when I worked at Target, I was onboarded. There was a day of sitting in an office doing nothing but paperwork and watching safety videos and finding out about all the OSHA garbage and all of it, right? And then you were given a trainer and you were trained for like a week straight or more on how to do all of the tasks that were part of your job. And there was someone there to guide you and walk you through it. And there was paperwork about it and you could follow along. And when you wanted to get a raise, you knew how to get a raise. You knew how to get to that next level of management. All of this stuff was documented out. Very, very few companies. And I'll even ask Dennis if he has any of it. I know that I did not have any of this in place. I am working on trying to make some of this stuff for Floor Academy as it grows. I know companies that are working in the mastermind groups and they're developing this stuff out because you will not grow your business if you don't have this stuff in place. How do they go? How do they grow? How do they know what they're going to accomplish? How do you hold them accountable? How do you keep the standard? There has to be these things in place for it to work. And so if you're just willy-nilly, you know, well, we're going to fly by the seat of our pants. Yeah, you're going to keep firing them because they're not living up to this impossible dream that you've put out there that you keep to yourself. No one can hit your standard because no one knows what it is. Go document it and then see if it's possible. And
I'm sure the people that are saying that, you know, that they haven't accepted this stream ownership or read the book or whatever, are saying, well, I don't have the time to do all those things. And that's, you know, that there's some merit to that. Mm-hmm. But if you say, okay, I might not have the time, so I have to work a model that I can within my current situation and maybe improve it as I go, but it's still up to me to make these changes. That's really the critical point is, like, obviously, yes. Target, they have somebody that they've scaled their business enough that they can hire somebody to do that one thing. But that doesn't mean that you can't do it better each time you do it. In fact, every time you hire somebody new, it's a great opportunity to set expectations differently than you did the last time. Like, because you might have created, like with the warehouse guy, I realized, okay, next time I can set somebody and say, here's our structure. And if you have to do something different, then what? Another thing in communicating those things effectively that doesn't take a lot of time. One thing I realized it was related to what you were saying earlier about, doing a shower pan or something like that, this is funny. I said to people, do it like it was your own house. And then I realized some people don't keep their houses very nice. So I need to say, all right, do it perfectly. Like, there's no like overspray of this, or there's no, you know, glue. I want it perfect. And you set the expectation of perfect, knowing that it's never perfect. But you set the expectation that they're trying to strive towards it. And that's what you could do in even a shorter period of time is, how am I going to communicate these expectations? How am I going to raise the expectations? Sometimes even beyond what you've been able to establish for yourself, knowing that it's going to come down to a level that's probably, you know, more attainable, but you're setting it like, I want the bathroom floor to sparkle. Just even that simple, you know, and that's, I want it to sparkle. I don't want you just to clean it once a week because That's what you realize. My definition of cleaning, my definition of whatever is, you know, you did it with the sweeping. This is exactly how I want you to do it. I want it to look great and beautiful. And if there's ever a time you can't do it, then let's talk about it and communicate back. That should be the accepted form that, you know, we have a truckload come in, so you couldn't get to it. Everybody understands that you can get it, but you got to set that standard. You can do it to some level to move yourself forward all the time without all the resources of a big company. Incremental steps. As long as you realize that, don't use the excuse that you can't just, okay, I can't do it because Target has it. There are things you can do. Take ownership of that. Make some changes towards communicating. A lot of it's just simple communication.
Well, a lot of it is, look, I know that you're tired after putting in 8, 10, 12, 14-hour days. I get it. 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Come home, relax, take a breather, watch it. Veg out, watch a TV show, drink a beer, whatever it is that you're doing, right? 15 minutes. Work on your business for 15 minutes. Jot some notes, get some ideas, write out the goals, write out the employee job description. What? 15 minutes. 15 minutes, 5 days a week. That's an hour and 15 minutes. That's 50 hours. And then you got a quarter of that. It's like 60 hours a year, right? So you're going to put an entire, a little over a week completely during a year into working on your business. It's more than you're doing now, right? And as you implement these things and run it better, then you will free up more time to work on it. You want somebody that's doing it? Go talk to Matt Garcia, look him up online. He did the mastermind groups for 2 years. He has freed himself up way more time to focus on trying to grow and scale his business as opposed to having to be on the floor working with his guys and all of that stuff. You want tips and tricks and you want to be able to grab resources. Why are you trying to reinvent the wheel? This is the other part. Somebody else already wrote an employee manual. Somebody else already wrote job description. Somebody else already has marketing materials. We're sharing all of that stuff within these groups between all of them and all of the members. So you get the advantage of what people have done before you and you just get it. Chat GPT is a thing now. Learn how to use it. You can have it write you contracts. You can have it write job descriptions. You can have it write want ads. You can have it do pretty much anything. And then you're going to type in, you know, hey, I want this. Well, okay, add this, tweak that, do this. It's not to make it perfect, but you could spend 15 minutes getting it to generate you whatever you want. The next day, you can spend 15 minutes or the next 2 days, put 30 minutes into it, tweaking it to make it a little more human-like, and really detail all that stuff out. Now you've got that piece to add to your business and move forward, right? And it's not going to change overnight. 15 minutes isn't going to change your business overnight. An hour, 2 hours, 40 hours within a year, that's going to change your business. Dennis, did your business change the minute you decided to start listening to Stephen Covey? Or did it take you like years? You're still implementing it, I guarantee.
Admitting that my fault was the hardest part. That takes years. You can't reinvent your childhood and all your learning experiences overnight. Sure. That's hard.
I think what we're gonna do is we need to get Chesney on here, and we'll talk about what it's like growing up with a dad in the flooring business and then becoming part of the business.
That's a whole nother experience.
We'll hear a whole different side. We'll hear a whole different story about Dennis.
Well, you said acted humbly. Raising five kids, that'll make you humble.
Oh, man.
Unique individuals that have their own skill set, and you have to just direct. You can't control it. It's its own thing.
Not only that, but they're a mirror. And it's not even the bathroom mirror. It's the worst mirror. It is like, right. Where'd you get that from? Oh, that's from me. Oh man, we got to work on that. Is there anything we didn't hit on that we need to talk about within this topic?
I don't know if we have any time, how much time we have, but it resonated with me what you said. And I just, you know, I was writing notes for this, you know, thinking about my own experiences. I had written, hire people that know more than you do, you know, and have system, don't be afraid to put in new systems and do some work like with software and things. It's the similar kind of a concept, like seek things that are better than you, seek things that are better than your current situation. And I was listening to you and you said the mastermind group, and it's, even if you're not in a position to hire somebody that makes you better, reach out in a really productive way to find people that do know more than you do and be willing to listen to them. That's why those mastermind groups are, it's a shortcut. It's the shortcut to learning all this stuff the hard way. In fact, these resources weren't there. The technology wasn't there when I was doing it. And you beat your head against the wall and you might have to read some books, but it's all there and it's doable. Just like you said, learn from people that have made the mistakes or are going through these situations that might have that's the same thing as hiring. They might not be a better business owner than you, but they might be a better accountant. So don't be afraid to hire somebody that's better at accounting, or you might be used to sales and you want to say you're the greatest salesperson that ever lived. And you're actually kind of minimize what other people do, or you're minimized not by not listening to them. That people that actually may be better than you at the sales, it only makes you better and the company better. So that just struck me as a tie into what we're talking about leadership.
Definitely.
Seeking people and information that are better than you in a given area. You don't have to admit you stink, but people can't do everything. There are definitely people that have focused, or they have these skills that you haven't been able to do. So don't be afraid to bring them into your orbit, either through the hiring or through just joining a group. I think that your group is mastermind group is there's really no other better way to do it, especially when you are scaling. You're learning directly the whole process. And I think you said Matt Garcia, I think you said that was his name, that most of these things we know. We just gotta you have to implement it. You gotta do it. You gotta make it happen and join and 15 minutes. Everybody can do it, and they know they need to do it. It's just I don't know why we don't do it, and including me. Why I don't know why.
I know why. We talked about it. It's accountability. There isn't any where you. It's hard to hold yourself accountable.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to. I love that you said hire somebody that can do things better than you. Right. I think a lot of us think that if we want to grow our flooring business, we have to be the person that gets stuck behind the desk. And I know a lot of owner operators love being in the field. They love the actual art of the installation. Hire somebody to manage the business for you. You can do that. You don't have to be the one to manage it. You can still install. You can be the guy that leads a crew, and you can hire someone to go run the showroom or run the office or run, right? You're going to have to build something out. You're going to have to you're going to have to make it happen, which means you're going to lose the install for a little bit, but then you build it out, you put the systems in place, you hold them accountable, and you can be off running around doing what you love while somebody else is doing the things you don't like. Hire people to do the shit you hate. That's what you should be doing. I didn't like caulking. I loved having an apprentice. Here, day one, I got these baseboards I put in. Here's this caulk gun. You need to do it like this. The dude was caulking better than I could within a week because I hated it so much. I loved it, and I never had to do it. I would install them. He would caulk all of them. I didn't have to do the tedious, mind-numbing job anymore. Everyone was happy. Hire people to do the shit you hate.
Well, not just the shit you hate. It's stuff that you're not as good at. I would say that in order to scale, though, you do have to – those people that come in, if you say, here, you hire and run the showroom or you do the books. If you're not, you have to invest a little bit in it. It's not something you have to do all the time, but you do need to learn what they're doing because, you can get ripped off with your books. There's all kinds of, you do need to, even though you hate it. And I hate like insurance quotes every year. I tell the insurance people you're making my eyes bleed, right? Just talking about this, but you have to force yourself to sit down and say, all right, I'm gonna learn enough about this that I can at least call BS on it. And it's the same with those skills that are better than you. I would say, you can put them in place, but you have to know enough of it to be dangerous. I've done that with SEO work, with websites. I've done that, where I keep on getting ripped off of this area. I'm gonna dig in. I'm gonna learn it. I'm not gonna do it because I hate it, but I'm gonna learn enough about it that when somebody's I can call BS on somebody that's at least telling me. And I did that with installation, every aspect of installation. The installers hate it because when it goes up the chain to me, I've been through every experience and I've done every warranty claim. I'm like, and they, because they don't want to hear that I've, that the answer I'm going to give them, because again, it's not something I do every day, but I know enough about it that I can say, have we looked at this? Have we called an expert? Have we whatever to get the true answer? But yeah, I would just clarify that you can't, especially the books. You can't leave them up to, you got to, you don't have to be an accountant, but you got to look at the accounting and say, explain that to me. Why did that happen? Why can you put this together in a format? And we do that with Cronus. We do that. We help the people that get on the software. We help them not just use the software, but understand how they can use QuickBooks. We're all in on this and saying, hey, you could, here's how QuickBooks gives you this information. And here's some strategies that we're not going to tell you how to run your business. Everybody has a great way to run their own businesses, but here's what we've done, you know, and we've learned some mistakes. So just consider this and look at it. And, you know, it becomes kind of like a big family when you're sharing these common struggles and, you know, common problems that you're having, because you need people that are experts outside of what you know that you can count on, like the mastermind group, like software, like what we're doing, where you know, you got to get to a level of trust with it, but it, you know, they're resources that you can learn a little bit more than you did always, move fall forward, learn a little more than you were doing previously, that you hate it, but you understand just enough of it.
I appreciate you clarifying it because you're right. It's hire people to do the shit you hate, but yes, you do need to know enough to be dangerous and hold people accountable. And if you want to learn about that, go back probably a week, 2 weeks from this episode. It's right there. Find the episode with Aaron Albrecht that I just
I
recorded. It
saw
comes out
that.
right before this. It's an amazing tale. It couldn't it happen? It happened to a horrible person. She got why can't I think of the word? Embezzlement. Over $100,000 is embezzled from her company because of her in-house bookkeeper. So go listen to it. You can hire bookkeepers. You can trust them. This was like super crazy situation, unbelievable that it happened. It's an awesome episode. It's not even, I mean, it's out now if you're listening to this as a podcast proper and not watching online, but the numbers aren't even in on it because we're recording this before it's released. I know it's an awesome episode. People are going to love it. You're going to get a lot out of it. You're going to learn a lot. It's an amazing tale. But Dennis is right. You got to know enough to be dangerous, and that's, you know, maybe that's kind of the theme so far moving into this year, as I end of last year's, because I just had the episode with the, if you want to learn how to hold your marketing agency accountable on, you know, how they're doing your SEO and building your website, all that stuff. I just recorded an episode with a lady about that. And, you know, she's saying, like, if you are going to hire a company, because she's in that space, this is the questions you need to ask. This is what you need to be having us do. These are the meetings you need to be having with us. I don't know that. That's not my area, right? I got to go learn enough. And so I found somebody to talk it over with that can do it.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people want to present you with vanity metrics. Well, that doesn't do me a lot. It looks good on paper, but it doesn't move the needle. But I think that's part of the conversation, right? You have to learn enough to be dangerous, to hold people accountable so that you know you're not being bullshitted, but hire people to do the things you don't enjoy and that you're not great at. And you generally don't enjoy
and
doing
that are
things
better
that
than
you're
you, that are
not
better
great
than
at.
you in any given task. So you can always, you always improve. But yeah, do I get a little credit underneath the not know enough to be dangerous on the
Definitely.
tagline? If you use that for 2024, know enough to be dangerous.
I don't know. Maybe that's what it's going to be. But yes, for
I'm
sure,
just
man.
saying, oh my
I
goodness.
definitely, I enjoyed the conversation. I think that's it's, again, I love the humility, right? You keep coming out and you're like, look, I don't know. I have people that can do it for me. I went and I found the answers. I went and I read the books and I put the time in to figure it out. I've made mistakes. I screwed up. Maybe I shouldn't have fired the warehouse guy and I should have found a better way to give him a way to succeed at his job. And I think that's what we do. A lot of times we just fire people.
Yeah.
And it's not, we don't look for what the underlying cause of what created the situation is. We just, oh, you screwed up, you're fired. Well, what caused it? And it's probably us, because we're not being good leaders and giving them a clear path to succeed. So I think that's where we will wrap it up. Go examine yourself. Step back, look in the mirror. It's hard and it's not fun. Go look in the mirror and like write down three, four things that like you're struggling with, right? Like how, what do you need to change that you can realize when you actually examine yourself? Go write them down, work on them. It's still early enough in the year. If you haven't written down goals that you're going to accomplish this year, now's your chime, the time. How's your chime? Now's your time to do it. Go. If you're just thinking about them in your head, it's not going to happen. I know. You got to write things down. Look, I took notes during the episode so that I can make a video and put it out, because I stopped doing that towards the end of last year. I had a lot going on. Maybe we'll get into that in one of the episodes. But I think that's going to do it. So what did we do? Go to FloorAcademyPod.com. Go check that out. We've got some awesome files over there. If you need to figure out your day rate, you want to do some job costing, you want to keep track of your equipment, we got some other stuff in there in the file section. You can learn about the masterminds, FloorAcademyPod.com/mastermind. If you're listening to this live and you want to change your business, I have a group I'm trying to put together that will start Wednesday, January 9th. It's the second. I'm running out of time, but we're going to do it. I got two people committed, maybe a third. I need five. So if you're listening or you listen to this the next couple of days, reach out, shoot me a message. Let's get you signed up. Let's talk about it and what it can do for you, how it can help you grow your business. If you want to help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/Floor Academy. Even $5 a month goes a long way in helping me continue to do what I do over here, asking the questions, learning, finding the experts to make sure that you are dangerous to others around you so that you can focus on the things that are important and hold other people accountable to accomplish the things that you don't enjoy doing. And like, subscribe, leave a review, do all that stuff, right? And then go tell a friend and subscribe on YouTube, and then tell like 10 other people to subscribe on YouTube so that I have 1,000 subscribers and we can do like the monetization thing over there. That's roughly at like 225, 250, somewhere around there. So I know that there's 1,000 individual unique IP addresses that have listened through Apple. So there's at least 1,000 people that have listened at some point. So just go use your YouTube account or your Google account or one of the 5 that you have, if you're like me, and go click subscribe on all of them. That'll help me out. Another plug, Dennis, Chronosoft. If you want to get a demo from his amazing daughter, Chesney, on the software so that you can be better organized and have all of this information in one place, it's chronosoft.com, chronosoft.com. Is there anything else they need to know or when they visit the website that they should go and look at? Like,
We'll make it easy. We won't bug you if you do it, and you have to change your time frame. Whatever, we'll do it. We're not going to hound you. We understand how it is. We'll do it. Give you the information. Do it as quickly as you want, or as long as you want. It's all up to you. And I just want to say, I don't know if you give me another chance. This has been fun. You know, you talk about personal development and willing to learn. This is obviously something I've never done before. So I appreciate you having me on. If I don't get a chance to say that later, that you know this. This is, it's been an experience learning. I'm pushing myself towards something I didn't know I was comfortable. I wouldn't be comfortable doing, but I appreciate the opportunity.
It's fun. It's been great, man. I totally enjoyed it. And I, you know, I appreciate the kind words. I'm glad that it's not it's a good experience. I don't know that I've had, I do know. I know one person that's had a bad experience, but that phone call didn't last longer than 10 minutes when I was just recording phone calls back in the day. And they went way, way out on a limb. That's something that they would normally never, ever, ever do. They tried, didn't work. Episode never came out because it never happened. But I commend them for even stepping out and being willing to take the chance. Yep. And so, I know that a couple of people have been on here and they're like, I hate speaking. I can't believe you convinced me to do this. And so I've made a lot of good friends in the industry that I've put in a lot of uncomfortable situations through this show. So congratulations.
You're really good at it. You're good at creating conversation.
All right. So we've got one last thing. Where was I? I was just at the International Surface event in Las Vegas. Maybe Dennis was there. Are you going to be there?
Yep.
I'll be there. You guys got a booth?
We do not have a booth. Okay. Not. We're going to be at the Atlanta show right after that.
Coverings.
Okay. We're going to go. Yeah.
All right. Go see Cronus at Coverings then. All right. They're going to be over there, but they'll be out wandering around and that'll be good. So you can find them and talk to them. They'll be checking out the show, but so I was just there and it's packed with amazing products and exhibits. You can, so whether you were at the event or if you missed the incredible event, the Tice team has released a lookbook covering a highlight of over 100 products that were featured at the show. You can access it now online at intlsurfaceevent.com/lookbook, LOOKBOOK, or click the link in the comments below. And if you're not going to these shows, if you're not going to the conventions, you're missing out. You're cheating yourself from being able to get ahead in the industry. I love being able to see the technology. I love being able to see the new flooring. I love being able to see the new tools. what's most important to me is all of the people that I get to meet and network with. And then I can discuss the things that I'm seeing at the show with them and get even more insights on it. And I know, then I know what's coming at me moving forward. And I have people to call throughout the year to not only for me to like be able to do this show and continue these podcasts, but when I run into something in my business and when I was installing flooring full time still, I had people to call and say, hey, I ran into this. What do you think? How would you handle this? Right. I'm going and I'm not just dependent upon people in my local market that may not want to share with me. I have resources across the country and at this point across the world. Go to the shows. It's going to change your life, whether you believe it or not. If you can't find a way to 10x the investment that it costs you when you go to a show, I don't know what you did at that show. Guaranteed. I have no idea what you did. You've got to, you have to be able to find a way to 10x it, and you will. All right, that's what I got, folks. I appreciate you listening, and thank you, Dennis, for joining me. We will catch you all next week.